The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We're about to have a conversation with Tyson Slocum, who is the Energy Director for Public Citizen, the organization that is taking on BP in its relation to the federal government and how they're paying back the citizens of Louisiana. We did talk to British Petroleum. They couldn't come on today, so we bring you this conversation with Tyson Slocum. So Tyson, I'm curious about this. We were just, as we began to talk, you told me about a blog you just posted that I had not read yet on the latest explosion in the Gulf. And I understand it's not an oil spill, but an explosion nevertheless.
That's correct.
What did you write about?
Well, what we basically said is that this was a that this is slightly different from the BP disaster in a couple of ways. One, it has occurred in shallow water, 340 feet versus 5,000 feet for the BP facility. Two, this was not a floating rig like BP's. This is a fixed platform, which means it's physically attached to the ocean floor. And third, because it's in shallower water, that means that it should be easier, if this explosion leads to a spill of oil, to contain that leak. The primary challenge with the BP fiasco was that we encountered numerous technical difficulties with plugging a well in a mile deep of water. Those technical difficulties will not be present in 340 feet of water. So, and also it appears as though we don't have a loss of life here. So
right.
The bigger issue that we can learn from this is that the industry claims that offshore and shallow drilling is totally safe is still false, that even with heightened security, with ramped up regulations in the wake of the Deepwater Horizon spill, that offshore drilling still poses risks, and that the administration's continued moratorium on deepwater willing on deepwater drilling is sound.
So, but it seems that also in some ways, before we jump into the BP thing, I'm really interested in hearing what's going on with these payment the payment plan and why it is or is not working, is that Public Citizen and or you are taking a position that it's going to be a long transition to alternative energy, solar, wind, whatever that might be, and that we are relying on oil now, so we have to figure out how to do it safely while we're doing it.
Right. That, you know, the transition to clean energy is not going to be instantaneous. But we've got to start getting down that road now. The fact that the oil industry continues to receive about $5 billion a year in subsidies is crazy. This is an industry that is gobbling up federal monies that ought to be going to incentivize families and small businesses to install solar panels on the roof of their home or install a micro wind turbine in their backyard or make energy efficient improvements to their homes or businesses. These are the types of investments that actually help working people and not continuing to listen to the high-priced lobbyists who represent the entrenched industries. So we're not going to transition overnight, but it sure isn't helping that a big chunk of federal money continues to go to the oil and coal industries. That's just not helping matters.
Let's talk directly about this, about British Petroleum, BP, and the money they're supposed to be paying back to the people of the Gulf and the issues you have with this. That one of the things that you're talking about is that the compensation seems to be not what it is. This $20 billion compensation in an escrow fund managed by the federal government is not what it's being chalked up to be.
That's right. Remember that under current federal law, specific company liabilities for an oil gusher like BP's were capped at $75 million. So the administration was forced to try to get a voluntary agreement from BP for them to be on the hook for more than $75 million. And so they came up with this voluntary $20 billion escrow account. That, when it was announced, you know, sounded great. But
yeah.
Once we got our hands on the actual contract and started getting into the details of this $20 billion escrow account, we realized that it's not as great as it's been advertised. First, the $20 billion is not just earmarked to compensate victims. The $20 billion is to be shared with natural resource restoration expenditures. So, for example, restoration of the marshlands or other costs associated with rebuilding the ecosystem. That's money that's going to be taken away, basically, from commercial fishermen or folks that have lost livelihoods due to the reduction in tourism and so forth. Second, there is no mechanism for the escrow account to be renewed if the $20 billion is used up, which most people think it's going to be. And so this really does represent a cap on BP's liability of $20 billion. And third, the government signed the agreement not with the parent company, BP, but with a distant subsidiary called BP Exploration and Production. This subsidiary is only engaged in Gulf of Mexico oil and gas production. So this means that BP will now be insured that it will continue to have a robust presence in deep water drilling in the Gulf, because they need to in order to continue to finance the $20 billion escrow account. You know, if, in contrast, the government had reached the agreement with the parent company, BP, the government would have a large, diverse array of assets to draw upon to finance the $20 billion. Now, as it stands, the $20 billion can only be financed by Gulf of Mexico oil and gas production.
And not the entire corporation.
That's right.
So was that ever in discussion in when Congress and the president were looking at this? Was that ever part of the discussion, and then it became not part of the discussion?
We don't know, because all of these negotiations have been behind closed doors. Remember, this is a voluntary agreement that is not governed by statute. So there is no real statutory authority for the government to order or compel BP to pay this money. So the terms of this voluntary agreement are not nearly as strong as I think the administration could have made them.
And it's my understanding that within the settlement, that if, let's say I'm a shrimper or I own a business on the Gulf that's been affected by this oil spill, and I take X amount of dollars, $500,000, let's say, to cover some losses during this particular spill, then it's over. And that if something should happen in the future that shows that the shrimp aren't spawning, or there's some after effect that has really affected this business that could put me out of business, I can't go back.
No. The terms of the settlement process are, once you take a final lump sum payment, and that lump sum payment is supposed to not only compensate you for lost income that you've already experienced, but also try and calculate future losses. Once I take that lump sum payment, I cannot sue BP for additional damages. And we have concerns that people might be kind of pressured into these lump sum payments before their long-term actual harm has been accurately calculated.
So, what about the role that Mr. Feinberg plays in all this? Who runs this?
I mean, Feinberg is the administrator,
right?
But his administration of this fund is governed by the contract. and the contract is clear. So he is merely the person implementing the written contract. And Feinberg, we have to remember, is not a government employee here. He is a employee of BP. So his, you know, while he has a very good reputation, at the end of the day, he is an employee of BP, and his administration of the fund is governed by the language of the contract. And the language of the contract, we don't think, is very strong from a victim standpoint.
So, and unlike the 9/11 fund, that if there are effects, let's say, as I was reading in one of the articles, what could happen to fish populations may not be known for years. That's not included in this. That British Petroleum has no responsibility then, if beyond what happens right now.
That's right. You know, with the 9/11 fund, you had people being compensated for loss of life, and so what they came up with a formula of is how much the loved one was earning when they were killed in the terrorist attack, and what their projected lifetime earnings was going to be. And so it was a very simple calculation, actually, that tried to approximate what the total economic loss of their loved one was going to be. That is not the situation here in the Gulf Trust Fund. The Gulf Trust Fund is trying to estimate what the economic damages are to you and your family as a result of the oil spill. And BP and the administration are now trying to argue that most of the oil is gone, that therefore the effects of the oil spill are now largely over, and that people should be able to continue with their livelihoods as they were before the accident. So there's going to be a lot of pressure to put to estimate downwards the amount of money that people are owed. Also, with the 9/11 fund, you know, it was a fund established by Congress, funded by the American taxpayer. This BP fund is established by a private foreign-based corporation, paid for by a foreign-based corporation. And so you have a very different set of motivations in this case.
You sounded a little skeptical when you said that all the oil has been cleaned up.
Well, yeah, there's no way it has been. I mean, there was more than 5 million barrels of oil, and the administration comes out with a report saying that 74% of it has just disappeared. And that is just false. It's not supported by the underlying documentation in the report itself. That was a political conclusion because this whole episode has been damaging for the Obama administration. It's hurt his standings in the polls and in the opinions. And so they want to get this behind them as quickly as possible. And so there was political incentive to underestimate the continued presence of crude oil in the Gulf of Mexico. It's just their statement that 74% of the oil has just disappeared is not supported by the facts.
But I guess that would be an interesting conversation to have with some folks who think it is. I mean, because it's very difficult at this moment to kind of really put our hands around those facts.
And I think it's going to be very difficult for you to find somebody outside of the administration who believes that 74% of the oil just disappeared. You do not introduce that volume of oil into the Gulf of Mexico and just have it be broken down by natural processes. It's just impossible.
So what do you suggest? What is Public Citizen suggesting, and what supports does it have in terms of how to expand the fund, change the governance of this fund that would compensate people?
We're calling on the administration to renegotiate key details of the fund, and the way you do that is you get Eric Holder, Obama's Attorney General, in there to meet with BP executives and emphasize the ongoing criminal investigation of the company. You know, prosecutors threaten suspects all the time. They'll bring in a suspect who's got a minor charge against them, and they want to go after the bigger fish. And so they'll bring in the minor suspect. They'll pull out the suspect's wallet. pull out a picture of their wife and kids and say, do you want to see your kids again? Because if you don't cooperate with us, we're going to put you in jail for 20 years. If you do cooperate with us, we're going to take that into consideration and you're going to be with your family. That's the pitch that Eric Holder needs to make to BP. They need to show pictures of the 11 people that died on April 20th on the explosion. And Eric Holder, the Attorney General, needs to tell BP, we are going to go after executives and charge them with manslaughter. We're going to put people in jail for the rest of their lives unless you start cooperating with us and pay the money that is owed in a way that is transparent and effective. That's how you deal with a criminal probe. You threaten these executives by throwing the book at them, and you will get BP to cooperate. I haven't seen that kind of strong-arm tactic by the Obama administration. We use it against individuals every day in the criminal justice system. Criminals are threatened until they cooperate, and we need to start threatening BP until they fully cooperate.
Tyson, let me ask you a political question. Do you mind about what you just said? We see in America now the rise of the Tea Party, and that within the Republican primaries, especially, the Tea Party candidates winning right and left all over the country. And Democrats, whether you're a Democrat, Independent, Republican, it's not the source of this question, but Democrats hold on the House and the Senate are in jeopardy, many people would argue at this moment. And so I'm curious what you think would happen had the administration or President Barack Obama or folks within that administration taken the tact that you described just a moment ago about being tough with BP on the oil spill.
I think it would have really resonated powerfully with the American public. You combine their mishandling of the BP incident with their kid glove treatment of Wall Street. What's driving a lot of this Tea Party anger is a belief that special interests are getting away with murder and charging their bills to the American public in the form of massive deficits. Now, the Tea Party movement is a large, diverse thing that's difficult to break down into a simple thing like that. But I do think that there is a perception by a lot of people that this administration is in bed with Wall Street and hasn't been doing a good enough job looking out for working people and for taxpayers. And now, granted, there's another whole part of the Tea Party movement that is convinced that Obama is a socialist,
right?
Which is just a lot of propaganda from some right-wing media outlets. Because if you look at Obama's record, he is nothing even close to a socialist. And in fact, his handling of Wall Street and the oil spill show that actually Obama is a centrist. He wants to work with, not alienate, large vested corporate interests. And I'm not saying that you have to just always alienate corporate interests, but it's clear that the prioritization has been to work with these corporate interests rather than try to strong-arm them into doing the right thing.
Now, when the House of Representatives passed this bill on July 30th, and that you outline on your webpage where it would replace the existing $75 million liability cap for oil damages with an unlimited cap, reform the Mineral Management Services Agency, repeal legislative provision for exempted projects, including things like Deepwater Horizon, from having to do a detailed environmental analysis, bar companies with poor safety and environmental records from receiving new offshore drilling leases, and reform royalty rules. I'm going to ask you about some of those very specifically, especially the royalty rule. So that's passed the House. The Senate is kind of loath to take it up. Before the election, it seems.
A lot of it has been the lobbying of the American Petroleum Institute and the rest of the oil industry. Remember, on September 1st, the American Petroleum Institute organized a series of rallies in Texas, claiming that the Senate proposed legislation that would strengthen rules over the offshore oil drilling industry were going to be job killers. And what the American Petroleum Institute is confusing, they're confusing job creation with environmental destruction. We cannot continue to have the lax regulatory oversight that we've had over the oil industry and still protect our workers and our environment. The oil industry had an opportunity to regulate itself, and they failed. They failed miserably. And so now government has to come in and protect the public and protect workers. And the bill that the House of Representatives passed earlier this summer is a good piece of legislation that would go a long way towards restoring some regulatory order over offshore drilling. And the petroleum industry has been lobbying feverishly to block swift passage in the Senate. So I am dismayed that an industry that doesn't really have any credibility continues to carry this kind of weight in Washington, D.C.
And I, one of the things that you call for is not allowing BP to have these federal contracts to supply the U.S. military, $2.1 billion in contracts with the Department of Defense, and other issues, and boycotting BP. And I guess a question I have about that, and maybe some others have, is, I mean, BP is only one of the many actors in these kind of oil crises around the world. I mean, if you look at Shell and other companies, let's just say, well, what's going on off the coast of Nigeria, and the other things that are going on. I mean, I can see people are targeting BP because of this disastrous oil spill in the Gulf, but in the larger sense, is their behavior any more different than Exxon's or Shell's or anyone else's?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, none of the oil companies operate with a great track record. It just so happens that BP had the worst track record of them all. So that's important to note. But, you know, to say, well, BP's the worst and, you know, ExxonMobil's the best, I'm not sure that that's an accurate conclusion either. When you start digging into the details of these companies' operations, particularly in the developing world, where you've got weaker central governments, you've got less robust regulatory structures to oversee these powerful oil companies in countries like Nigeria, you're going to have more of an incentive by these companies to break even more rules in a country like that and expose workers and the local environment to unnecessary risks. All of this underscores how important it is for us to make this transition away from fossil fuels. You know, one of the big things we can do is moving towards green energy, towards renewable energy like wind and solar, electrifying our transportation sector so that more of our cars are running on electricity or a combination of an internal combustion engine and electricity. These are the types of transitions that are going to reduce our energy consumption and make it a lot easier to meet our energy needs through renewables.
So now where do you think we go now with all this? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think that, you know, we've got to put pressure on Congress, on the Senate, to pass this bill that will regulate offshore oil drilling in an effective way. And right now, the oil industry has been blocking efforts to get votes on this. And it's important for listeners out there to call your senators and demand that they stand up to big oil and quickly pass legislation that's going to hold big oil accountable.
I mean, I think that the things that you outline in the piece that I read, everything from I think that most people don't know about, which is that the Oil Pollution Act of 1990 would have allowed the federal government to have oversight over the cleanup of the spill, but BP took it, was given the right to do that instead. These are things the public just does not know. It's never that's never played up in a large degree in the press.
That's right. So you know, a lot of it is you know, trying to educate voters on this, and we can get, you know, we have a lot of information on our website at citizen.org.
And we will link to that. And Tyson Slocum, I want to thank you so much for being with us once again.
It was my pleasure.
That was Tyson Slocum, Energy Director for Public Citizen. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Richard Good, Gay Pinder, and Felicia Faison. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. Hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.